Before we get started, we'd like to provide a content warning. This podcast does discuss content regarding mental health and sexual experiences that may be difficult for some listeners.
Hey guys, what's up? How are you, Rox?
Monday morning, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling revived and ready to go for this little episode. I'm very ready today.
Yeah, you look amazing. I love the thing you did with your bangs.
I got my little research glasses. These are Rachel's glasses, but these are the pseudo research glasses.
It means today is for learning.
She's a research girl and she's gone too far. Because you know it don't matter anyway. what song is stuck in your head?
I have a good one today. We've just been singing so much. I'm going to have to think of one.
Okay, I guess mine then.
Yeah, what song stuck in your head?
I can't get no
satisfaction.
Does it sound? I feel like you guys are like, wow, I didn't expect this to be a radio show, but guess what it is? Bush Babies Radio coming soon.
I have one.
Okay, what is it?
I'm too sexy for my shirt, too sexy for my debt. It's sexy, it hurts.
That's a good one.
Ra-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay.
Yay, I love those. That's a good mood for today. Satisfaction and what's that called? Sexy.
I'm too sexy, I think, is literally the name. Yeah.
Satisfaction, I'm too sexy. That's the mood for this
week. Perfect for our theme, honestly.
Yes.
It's, I think, because we've been prepping for all this research. It's just woven into the songs.
Cosmic, some would say.
So today we have some awesome stuff in store. We're presenting some research on height and how in society today that is so linked to worth, and to the point where there are some women who will not date men under 6 feet tall. That is like a stark rule that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing goes for women. You know, if you want to be a model, you are supposed to be at least 5'7" or whatever. I don't know what the cutoff is officially.
Yeah, and we're also going to be getting into the history of vaginas through the ages, what has led to, you know, what we view of the current vagina in our society today. We also have a guest that's very near and dear to our hearts coming on and talking about her story and her own personal experience. I really wanted to study height equals worth because I feel like I've had a different personal experience than like most of the people that I know.
Yeah.
So I'm 5'7"-ish. Mm-hmm. I'm 5'6¾". Mm-hmm. but I have always, my dating preference is actually always to be the same height as my partner, which is very different than I think most people feel. So for me reading into this, it was kind of an interesting perspective because I was like, wow, like this really is ingrained into our society. Like I genuinely, just from my own personal experience, have never experienced. So I learned a lot and I'm excited to like share that with everyone.
No, it's so interesting because I bring you up all the time when talking about, when this topic comes up randomly in conversations with people, and it's the only time anyone I know has ever heard of a woman, especially as gorgeous as you, being attracted to not as tall and not having like a leaning towards taller being hotter. And so I can't wait to hear more about your research and your personal experience and like what comes out of it.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. Height equals worth, or does it? Plot twist, I think it seems like it does based on research for the average person, which again, I found very interesting. But not only does height seem to equal worth in a dating sense for the average person, it also equals worth in salary and even education. Wow. Studies have shown that like height has a direct correlation to how well educated people become, how much they get paid based on that education. And then the people that are just winning are just continuing to win in the dating aspect. So
that is crazy.
Yeah. Isn't that like a interesting take on that? And this specifically resonates for those who identify as men. So we saw more of a correlation for females attracted to men, less of a correlation within height for men attracted to females. And there wasn't enough research on female to female relationships or male to male relationships to have enough research on that.
Yeah, no statistically statistically significant difference. That's what I was trying to say.
Yes.
I should know this stuff. I'm a data girl.
I found this really interesting research paper titled Perceptions of Height, Attractiveness, and Power by Michelle A. Worth and Dr. Eleanor Gare, which basically studied quite literally how height and gender play into physical attractiveness and power.
Wow.
Power. Like, I was like, that's an interesting fallacy of this whole thing. So, getting back to perceptions of height, attractiveness, and power, the research paper, they basically took 117 Rowan University students. There were 53 males and 64 females. And then when they gave all these people, a range of personas, they actually did it all through papers. So they like gave them packets of people that ranged in height, sex, gender, etc., many different ages, or as many as they could within a certain range. I think the range was about 10 years.
Wow.
And there was a direct correlation between the height of a male / how powerful he is perceived, whereas power was quite constant for female participants, regardless of their height. So on the power front, males like are perceived more powerful the taller they are, which is I guess validating for what we see in society. Like, I feel like I do see that in our society.
I wonder if any of that just ties back to our more like animalistic drives.
I feel like it's surprising like how many things in our modern day world are actually derived from like such ancient times and thought patterns and mentalities. But that could totally be part of it. So that was on the power front. On the attractiveness front, female attractiveness increased as height increased. So like with every inch, attractiveness increased from the participants that were in this research survey.
Oh, okay. So girls get hotter with each inch.
Yes, with each inch, I guess, allegedly. But then it's like,
damn.
Like, for example, Corey. I know Corey has a lot of self-confidence issues based on her height, and it's like, it sucks, you know? No, she's open to me talking.
But Corey's hot as hell.
Corey
That's why.
Corey is so, so hot.
Also, like, Corey pulls. Like, we literally...
So, honestly, frick this. We don't care. All females are hot.
Period.
Yeah. Period. So now, for males, when the males were being researched on their height, average height was actually seen as most attractive for a male. So that's, like, the 5'9", 5'10 range.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting because I would think that, like, tall would be the most commonly seen as attractive, but tall was actually second, and short being least attractive on the average for these students, at least. I thought that was a really interesting article because it like kind of got down to the basics, and you know, in that 20-year-old range, I feel like I don't know. Interesting. Okay, so I read a study on Psychology Today. I've been loving Psychology Today. I feel like they're a very credible website, guys. I mean,
They're really giving.
I read some studies on Psychology Today that have shown that about half, so 48.9% to be exact, of women that they studied prefer to date men taller than them. 50%.
Yeah.
50% of people.
Wait, that's like actually
that
lower than
I
thought.
I knew you were going to say that. I felt like you were going to be like, that's lower than what I expected.
Because every time I brought up this episode to like straight guys I'm friends with and talked about your preferences, they've all said she needs to go on her platform and spread the word to the masses because she's the only girl who's ever said that she's attracted specifically to shorter men.
My mom actually said an interesting thing about me in this regard because it's like the amount of times that people have questioned my preference is a little, it airs on judgmental vibes, honestly.
Wow.
I think, yeah. And like, people have had talks with me like, what? Like, why would you date shorter men? Like, why do you like this?
Really?
People, yeah, with one of my exes, he would always, there was like a big drama because people like would come up to him and be like, you don't deserve her. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just like, it's actually crazy how society even views my own preference, which I feel ashamed to talk about sometimes. But honestly, fuck it. Like, I should put it out there more.
You are literally the star for Short Kings.
No. But what I was going to say was my mom thinks that it's a confidence thing, that like I felt like I needed more power in the relationship and that I would feel so far beneath somebody. And when I have dated a lot taller, I do actually. Like, so that's an interesting thing and why I thought like that study on power and attractiveness was interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if that's what it is, but like that's just something that like somebody has brought up to me. I want to see more research on this topic for same sex attractiveness because there really was not enough going around. So we need some researchers to
if
be on that.
If you are getting your PhD, do it.
Yes.
Do it for us.
Please. But yeah, to end off this topic, I just want to read an excerpt from Psychology Today, a different excerpt. This one is, as the researchers put it, short men were less educated, less healthy, and a higher BMI, and lower household income than taller men. Women of a given height who were paired with shorter partners also tended to be less healthy, less educated, and with a higher BMI than the women of the same height who were paired with taller partners. So all of that,
that's
crazy.
Like a research-backed burn.
Right? I was like, oh my gosh. I'm speechless by
but
that.
It's also like just correlation. So, you know?
Yeah.
It's not causation, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But all in all, to like, I feel like in conclusion, what I want to end this topic on is I don't believe that your height does have to equal your worth. Like, you cannot control what other people think of you. So honestly, fuck it. Like, live your best life. You do you, boo. And yeah, you're beautiful the way you are.
Yeah, it really all just comes down to confidence, I think.
Yeah, we're finding that a lot.
Yeah, I've dated people my height, taller, not that much taller, and I really don't think it matters personally. It's more just about confidence and being, you know, secure with yourself.
He's my type on paper. Okay.
All right. So now we're gonna do a little private part, historical deep dive on the history of vaginas. We're gonna roll back to ancient Greek and Roman times. There was an ancient Greek physician named Areteus, we're just gonna go with that.
Just go with it, girl.
Yeah, ancient Greek physician Areteus believed that the uterus wandered around the female body and caused illness as it bumped into other organs in your body. And he believed that it was drawn to different areas of your body via like smells and fragrances to like lure it back to where it should be. So they would like put all these scents like around your vagina draw it back. Like people just made shit up back then is what I feel like I'm kind of realizing.
This is reminding me, like, the world is flat. Like, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like, so out of
the blue. So then, there was another medical researcher in the Roman Empire named Galen, I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've heard of him.
Yeah, oh, that's
Galen, I think, or Galen.
Galen.
Ooh.
And he saw the vagina as a literal inside-out penis. And that became a common belief back then, is that women and men shared the same sexual organs, just women's were inside of them versus men's were out of them.
Wait, what?
So, yeah, they literally thought, like...
So they thought it was, like, a
pocket.
We
have, like, balls inside of us, basically. Yeah, it was, like, just inside out. But for the longest time, it was just a common belief that there wasn't a difference between, like, men's and women's sexual reproduction, which is just doesn't make any sense because obviously women are the one that make the babies. So, and everyone knew that back then. So, and then in the Renaissance period in the 1500s, there finally became like published drawings of genitalia along with other organs, because this was the time when bodies were first used for research. So medical researchers could, you know, cut the bodies open and see what was inside and do diagrams of that stuff. But out of all of this, it was still considered scandalous by the church. Mm. Many books of the time hid genitals under flaps of paper or omitted the genital regions completely from the research books. Like, they'd have the whole body except that area. Because we are influenced by Christianity in everything, and it's crazy to think about. Then we skip to the Enlightenment period from 1685 to 1815, and this is what got me. There wasn't even a medical term for the vaginal canal back then until the 1680s, and then vagina was coined, and before that, the Latin term vagina referred to a sheath for a sword. And so with the printing press being invented at this time, more people were able to learn about sex and the female body, that, and more information was disseminated across people. So
interesting.
There was just like no talk of it for so long until this period. So then in the 1800s, something to call out is that up until this time, you know, childbirth was a very normal part of human life, but that was done at the home. So as people in the 1800s started going to hospitals for this, it became more of like a medical practice with research behind it. And then we obviously have to call out this guy, James Marion Sims, who's considered the father of modern gynecology, who was a doctor in Alabama in the 1940s, and he was just the devil, essentially. He tested on so many women slaves at the time, and he basically invented the entire field of gynecology as we know it today. He created the vaginal speculum, the one that is used in every OBGYN's office. The metal thing that goes in,
that's like
was
that.
Created by him. And all of his methods, even at the time, were considered questionable. So it's not like this was a normal thing. It was like he was a weirdo doctor who decided that, you know what? I'm going to do research on this area because I'm going to be a creepy man and do it. And I'm going to get slaves to do it on. And there were three main women, Betsy, Anarka, and Lucy, that he performed over 30 operations on without anesthesia. Anarka alone starting when she was 17 years old. So with,
oh my God,
with great, I guess, innovation in this medical space comes great sacrifice. And there are monuments that used to have Dr. Sims on, like, celebrating him, that have been taken down and replaced with the names of all the women, specifically these three women who underwent the most surgery. And this is the really fucked up thing, is we don't even know their last names because they were slaves. And there are probably so many more women whose names weren't even documented during this research.
That actually breaks my heart. I had no idea that gynecology had that beginning.
Let's skip on over to the 1970s. The book Our Bodies, Ourselves was published by Judy Norsigian and other women in the Boston's Women's Health Book Collective. And it spoke very directly and frankly to women about everything from anatomy to sexual health and menopause. And so this was kind of that book that was passed around across women that was like the secret first sex book where women could learn about their bodies and
written by
sexual health. Yeah.
For women.
Yes. And this is just a random fact I want to call out during this time, that it wasn't until 1994 that the NIH mandated that most clinical trials included women, because the assumption was that all of these drugs would work the same on both sexes. So that goes back all the way to, like, relates, at least in my mind, to the ancient Roman times, where people thought that the sexual anatomy was pretty similar between men and women. That's like after you were born, before I was born.
Yeah, I was literally born in 93. That's like, insane, yeah. Actually.
I know.
Like, we're in the 90s. We're like, what?
So in 2013, there was a survey done at a U.S. university that found that only 38% of college women could correctly label the vagina on an anatomical diagram.
Oh.
And men only 20%.
Oh.
So, skipping to society today and talking about, I don't know, taking into account the fact that there hasn't been a lot of visibility to women when it comes to vaginas, sexual health, their organs, what they look like, that creates this gray area, and lack of information creates judgment and doubt for a lot of women around what their private parts should look like. So then that skips to today, when we're seeing rates of women who don't work in the sex work industry getting cosmetic surgery done on their private parts, to the point where like 99% of all people won't even see it, but they're undergoing surgeries because they think their vaginas are abnormal. And the reality is, like, when you do the research, which is what I'm going to update you guys on today, is 56% of women have a visible labia minora. So they would be considered outies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as normal to have an outie as an innie, yet with this lack of information and history and overrepresentation in the media of what a vagina is supposed to look like creates this sense of doubt. So in the same study, 86.5% of women considered their labia being normal, and within the group who perceived their genitals to be abnormal, 73% had a visible labia minora. So that's, I think, a crazy statistic, because over 25% of women who didn't have outies still considered their vaginas to be abnormal. And that's something that I think most women don't talk about, but as they're going through puberty, like, I had no idea what my vagina was supposed to look like. I just thought it looked weird.
Right.
And I was judging myself so much, to the point where, like, because no one talks about it.
Yeah.
And you're getting your period. All you know is this, like, gross stuff starts to come out of it once you hit, like, puberty. And you're just like, this is gross. Like, I'm afraid of it. And for so long, I was so afraid of my vagina. And it's crazy because it's literally a part of your body, just like anywhere else,
right.
You know?
100%. I feel like I've always been, like, when I was first hitting puberty and started to have my menstruation cycles and stuff, tampons scared me.
Same.
Scared me.
Well, because I didn't want to, like,
don't have
get
a lot
closer.
Of education. And it's like there's this, like, weird connotation around it where it's like you don't want to ask people. It's, like, embarrassing at that age when you're first going through it. And if the conversation is not started, you don't feel comfortable. And I cannot even really imagine, like, feeling, you know, like, because that's just a tampon, not my actual vagina. So that takes it a way step further.
Going back to some of this research I was doing about labiaplasties and how common they are, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, so ACOG, warns against these procedures, calling the marketing process deceptive because it specifically implies that these surgeries are accepted and routine when there's no medical value in getting them. They're fully cosmetic. And there are different types of surgeries with your vagina that are medical, but the ones I'm talking about and referencing are the ones that are purely cosmetic.
Got it.
Just to talk about, like, the influence of media on this, because first off, no one's talking about vaginas. So what do you turn to? Magazines, what's popular, porn, the representation in media. Vanessa R. Sheik.
Noted, we don't know.
Yeah, we really don't. Noted a similar trend amongst Playboy magazine centerfolds, reporting that none of the images portrayed prominent labia minora, so no outies in it, nor did they represent a realistic color variation. So all genitalia was uniformly portrayed as pink or pale.
read.
So many of our topics come back to marketing and media, which is just so interesting because it really does affect the way that we as humans view ourselves and our bodies. And like, that's pretty freaked up.
Yeah.
You know? Like, how can it be uniform? We're not fucking robots. But like, as in your adolescence, you obviously will believe that.
Especially when we're talking about, I think, vagina specifically, because you don't have any representation or reference from anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
As we were saying, the vulva is typically represented in mass media as hairless and flat with no protrusion beyond the labia majora, similar to a prepubescent aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Little girls who grow up seeing Barbie's perfectly etched plastic V is the sole representation of an average vulva is hardly helping things, you know?
Yeah. No.
And so the hairlessness creates such a distorted view of what is considered normal, and they fail to represent true diversity of the human body.
100%.
Yeah. Just to give a little more context about like vaginal rejuvenation surgery, there has been an increase over the years. So in 2019, over 164,000 labiaplasties were performed, as reported by the Female Genital Cosmetic Surgery Board, FGCS, and that's a 24% increase compared to 2018, and a 73% increase compared to 2015.
Wow.
And labiaplasty is the 15th most popular plastic surgery procedure among female patients for 2019.
Wow.
And another thing to call out is this could be an underestimate because reporting for procedures performed in the private sector isn't mandatory. So that could be an underestimate. But I thought this was a really fun tidbit is that women with self-reported larger labia majoras and minoras derive more sexual pleasure from the stimulation of these areas than women who perceive their labia to be smaller, possibly owing it to the greater surface area.
So it's a positive. We love that.
Yeah, she gets better sex maybe with it. So
we're all for that.
I would not want to change that if I was blessed with that. I think just this lack of education with the young girls leads us all vulnerable to decide for ourselves what's normal, and then what's out there is just not representative. And that has influenced us to decide what vaginas are considered quote-unquote aesthetically pretty today.
Wow.
Wrapped it all up with a bow.
That was incredible, dude. Like, that was a very educational, like, I loved that. And I hope our listeners do too, because that was very educational. I think the lack of education is a thing. And I don't even the other day, like, you were educating me on how my own vagina pees or does, and where to put my depository pill to get rid of my yeast infection. So, education. I want to be more educated. So thank you for bringing such great facts to the table. All right, guys. So next we have Amber Strickland, artist and copywriter here in New York City. She is on Instagram. You can find her at Weepling and at ambi.strickland. And she is our incredible friend that we happened to meet here in Brooklyn, actually, at a concert. So let's get into it. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you again for coming on.
My pleasure. I'll just get into this topic, but I grew up in Massachusetts, which is a pretty progressive state, but still there were areas that were not being like fully elaborated upon, and including like the sex ed there.
Yeah.
So I remember entering the puberty stage for everybody and like learning about sex ed for the first time, and I must have been like 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just getting into the material, like starting it that week, and we were given all of like our new sex ed books and like our health books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were going over it, and they were the worst, like most simplistic diagrams and depictions of various anatomy. Various being like the two sexes, not various in like the different, that's what this is all about. And I remember seeing the image of what the like female born body looked like and being like, that's interesting. That's not what I look like. What it showed was like the, you know, default porn labia, which is, you know, no labia minora.
Like just super tiny labia minora, barely any labia majora. Like,
almost nothing. Just like the tiniest vulva. Which is like lovely for anybody that has that, but that is not the majority of bodies. That 56th percentile. So I saw that. I remember being like a little thrown off kilter and like confused. And also my home environment, my mom did not have any sort of like sex talk with me. Definitely my dad not, did not either. Are you kidding me? He was like, skirt. No fucking way. But I remember going home and feeling like I was going to throw up, thinking there's something wrong with me because I didn't fit this image that I saw in the book. And going to my mom, and the only words I could get out was like, I need to see a doctor. Like, there's something wrong. And like not being able to say anything else. And I remember the feeling of like dread and shame in that. So my mom ended up bringing me to the doctor. She had no idea what was going on. She also didn't really push me to come out with more of it. She was just like, okay, we'll go. And I had a female doctor, and I asked my mom to like leave the room. So it was just my doctor and I, and I just like broke down crying. I was like sobbing. And I said, there's something wrong. And I, all I could do was like point, and she did an exam and she looked at me and she was like, you are fine. There's nothing wrong. But then she immediately started discussing, labiaplasty and like surgery and alterization of appearance.
And you were so young.
That's and
so
I didn't even know, I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, is there, wait, I'm fine, but why, what needs to be fixed?
Like, why are you telling me this then? Like, what?
Exactly.
What is this narrative?
Exactly. And now looking back on it, it's almost hilarious to me. You know what I mean? It's like so comically crazy, that situation. Also, when it comes to like the scale of how different bodies can be. Like, I've been reading Emily Nagoski's, like, Come As You Are. That book is fantastic.
So good.
She goes through so many different statistics of, like, vulva shape, sizes, etc. Like, I'm pretty middle of the fucking line. It's crazy that a doctor in this instance would offer that kind of route instead of being like, listen, honey, baby child, small creature in this world. Like, everything's okay. Literally nothing's wrong. You don't have to alter anything. Like, let's talk about the variations of vulvas instead of you trying to fit into this one
category.
This one category.
Yeah. That's insane. I think, and as I did a lot of this research that we had just discussed prior in the episode, like, there, the whole realm of labiaplasties is not backed by some medical institutions because of the tactics that are used when it comes to marketing and advertising. The fact that they targeted a 12-year-old girl who's so vulnerable, first thinks something is so wrong with her, and then offers a solution just to make money, you know? I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
Thanks. I'm just sorry that also there are so many girls that experience that and followed through with getting surgery, which there's nothing wrong with that either, but it's unfortunate to be, for lack of a better word, manipulated into thinking that that is a better route.
The fact that that doctor ingrained that thought into your head legit breaks my heart.
Like, it was also a woman. She's a woman.
That's crazy.
Doctor, you know? That's pretty wild concept that women are also perpetuating this, unfortunately. It's all part of the industry in Western medicine.
We, in her research, she said that it, the industry itself has done $51 million
or they've made $51 million, I think, in 2019 on specific labiaplasties, and that's excluding gender-affirming
surgery. Isn't that insane?
That's excluding that too.
$51 million
That's just like aesthetically modifying.
Like like 18,000 or something were done in 2019, and they call it like some of the surgeries. It includes like a whole range of them that fall into this like labiaplasty. What is it? labiaplasty category. And that some of them are referred to like the Barbie doll surgery.
That's
how we're influenced, even as young as like 4 or 5 year olds playing with Barbie dolls, and you just see that perfect little V. So when you decided not to, you know, go through with the surgery at that age, what was it like as you got older and started, you know, experiencing having your first sexual experiences with men or women?
Well, before sexual experiences too, I did find kinship. And like, I had really close friends that were girls, like my best friends growing up. And one of them in particular also had like an Audi vulva.
Okay.
And I remember the first time, like when we were younger, we would all like take showers together and go swimming and whatever and run around. And this is when we were like, I don't know, 14.
Mm-hmm.
We were like tight, like peas in a pod from like 14 to like 18.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent a lot of time together. But I remember her and I having this bonding moment of like, you know, us as girls growing up, it was three of us all together.
Mm-hmm.
Like assessing each other's bodies, not in like a cruel way, but in this way of like, wow, look at how different we all are.
Like learning, because we don't learn about this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Having this like community. And her and I having this moment of like, I thought something was wrong with me. No, like you are perfect as is, but you look different than me, but we still have something in common here.
Yeah. Aww.
And that was very healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
That was like such an important time, because it was this real life example of like, oh, everything is actually okay.
Yeah.
I see some of myself in you, and like there are a bajillion other people out there.
Yeah.
You know? So that was important. And then also, shout out to Tumblr. I wish I knew the specific artist that did that series that really caught fire on Tumblr and like circulated like crazy. That was, I think they were like casted forms of various vulvas.
Yes,
you know, right?
I think I know exactly what you're talking about. And people, it was kind of like a little, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved that.
It was laid out in that like grid.
Yes,
the grid. There was like 200 of them at once. So you could see all these different vulvas.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like with the casting, since it was coming out in like the same color, you couldn't really see the variations in like skin tones.
Yes.
So the racial array was, you know, But for shapes and anatomy wise, like that blew my mind. I remember zooming in on that on Tumblr, searching around, being like, oh my God, just feeling okay and feeling so much power from that and seeing the comments. Ugh, that was important
too. Dude, Tumblr was such a time to be alive. Honestly, we love a Tumblr moment. It really was a community that made you feel inclusive. Like that was one of the best social media platforms.
We could revive Tumblr.
Yeah.
Hey, let's do it.
It was kind of like the first For You page, I feel like.
Yeah.
Where it was curated based on what you wanted. Instead of,
honestly, true,
you know, just looking at what all your friends were doing and conforming to that. So,
and it felt like shadowy and dark in there, and like secretive, and like you could do whatever you want. Love Tumblr.
Yeah, that's great. Well, do you have any questions?
I think one of my questions, because I personally, in my own journey with my body in different ways, have dealt with a lot of self-worth obstacles. So I guess my question to you is, through that experience, do you feel like it has impacted your self-worth at all?
Yeah. When I was younger, for sure. I felt extremely self-conscious about everything to do with my body, but especially those elements. Yeah, I would say up until, I'm 26 now, up until being like 22 or 23, I think I still felt self-conscious about it. Even being aware of how normal it was, I still felt as if there is some shameful element.
Yeah.
Simply because of being aware of people's perspectives. So that led to self-consciousness.
Yeah.
The information, the real
facts.
The facts are the comforting bit that I would go back on in order to be like, okay, it doesn't matter anything that I hear floating around in the world. I'm still okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, self-consciousness persisted for sure.
I guess So knowing that from the moment that I met you, I feel like you are just the embodiment of confidence. Oh, like truly, you. Like you exude confidence and strong, powerful womanhood. So I guess what has helped you in this journey to become, you know, who you are today, or at least view yourself, you know, the way that you do now?
Firstly, thank you. That is an honor to hear. I love hearing that. I think confidence is very infectious. And I think of like confident women in my world, in my history, that have inspired me to be that way. I think that was one thing that really helped. And another thing is just like, I purposely spent a lot of time in my younger 20s being a friend to my body. I did every corny thing on the list you can imagine. I looked in the mirror every day and I was like, I fucking love you.
Yes.
You're doing your best.
It works.
It works.
It works.
Affirmations
work. They
work.
And people don't think that they, like, people doubt. I even doubt sometimes. And then I'm like, no, they work. Mm-hmm. They work over time.
They really do. I walked around like naked as much as possible.
Yes.
Anytime I could. I like did yoga every morning naked. I like looked at myself in the mirror. I listened to podcasts. Also, another really great sex podcast is Shameless Sex. Ooh, shout out to those women.
We'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Revolutionized a lot of my perspectives on sex and my own health and relationships.
Wow.
That helped a lot. That was like a very pivotal for me. I think I binged that for like a year straight.
Wow.
Reading a lot of books, reading a lot of different voices. Also, there's this one website that I found and came across, and it was all about elaborating on women's sexual health. And I'll try to remember the name, and maybe we can add it in like the description afterward.
Yeah, definitely.
But it goes through so many different vulvas and very specific women, and that helps a lot as well. And then I think having more sexual experiences with women and men, and understanding that nobody, and if you are listening and if you are self-conscious about your body, literally nobody at any point was like, here's a comment about your vulva, aside from like fill in the positive descriptor here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is only good things. Nobody really gives a shit. They're lucky to see your body and have that kind of relationship with you or that connection at that moment in time. That's it. And also like not just to add like an advice bit that I wish I could have given my younger self.
Yeah.
Like focus on the exterior more, like the self-consciousness that can exist in your head, especially if you're having like a connective moment with another person intimately. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to think about how you look. You really don't.
Yeah.
Like get into the like tantric element of just being in the moment.
Yes. Stay present.
Yeah. Stay present.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that's like I think the best advice for any one who's learning about sex and wants to have, I guess, a better time having sex is being in the moment, like while you are doing it. Like it's not that common of an occurrence where you get to be that close with someone else. And so making the most of it and not being as worried about how your body might be perceived. Because at the end of the day, if someone gets to have sex with you, they should be fucking rejoicing about it, you know? And they are, you know?
Mm-hmm. A two-way just like high five guy. Thanks for being here with me.
Yes.
Like, you're perfect, I'm perfect, right?
Yes. I guess the final question that I have about this whole thing is if you've experienced any, like obviously self-love as a journey, there's ups and downs, like with everyone's experience there. You have good days and bad days. Have there been any points in your life where you had considered again possibly getting a labiaplasty or making a change like that?
Honestly, when I was an older teenager and like starting to get into sexual connections with people, I recalled that being an option and felt insecure and like, but never truly followed up on it. Didn't truly want to.
That's good.
But that being said, there are a lot of like people born with vulvas in the world where like there might be discomfort, and a labiaplasty might actually be a good move for them.
Yeah.
And it might actually lead to like a healthy element
definitely
in their life.
Yeah, and that's a differentiation that I think we should make really clear on this episode is that all of the facts and research presented around labiaplasties were for cosmetic only labiaplasties. There are labiaplasties with a medical additive or involve making someone's life like medically easier.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's not what we are referencing in this, obviously.
Okay, I guess our close out that we have for you, we do this with all of our guests, is hot takes.
Yeah, hot takes. You just say a hot take on life.
Hot take, hot take.
You know this game.
Yeah, you know. You know,
as a friend of us, you know.
I love this icebreaker of y'all. It's very cute. So I thought of a hot take the other day. It's going to sound crazy at first, but I don't think French bulldogs should exist.
Oh, I totally agree.
So, yeah. Also, French bulldogs' sexual health rights in this world. I learned that almost every single French bulldog is born from a C-section.
Oh, my gosh.
And every mama bulldog has to be cut open in order to let a baby into this world because they have been bred anatomically to not be, like, an actual organism that can procreate successfully. So their hips are too small and their heads are too big.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and you also can't fly with them because their nasal passages will collapse. There's a lot of health issues.
What is the there's a term for it, like trachea something.
Oh,
there's a whole like
probably
group of dogs that are like that, and it's so sad to see. I saw this TikTok of a bulldog that was brought into the emergency vet because she tried to walk her dog like around the block, but it was, since we're in a heat wave right now, it was starting to have heat stroke, and they had to like put saline in him, like put
a
throat thing so he could breathe, and he's just literally on this table and they're like putting fans over just trying to stay cool. It's so sad.
Yeah, it's. I think we played God too hard with that breed, and I think we should take all of the remaining French bulldogs in the world and give them every belly rub and let them procreate if they aren't fixed with other breeds, and let them become healthier and better.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's my hot take. I know they're cute, but
I'm
let's treat them
the
better.
I'm signing the petition.
Yeah.
I'll sign it.
No, I agree, because it's like we can't just keep forcing a horrible life on dogs for our own aesthetic pleasure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's cruel.
Awesome. Well, cheers. Liquid death, everyone.
Thank you, Amber.
Or,
thank Poppy. You for having me on.
Thank you for sharing your story. You are so strong and somebody I look up to, and I'm so grateful that I've met, like, honestly. Yeah.
I'm so grateful I met you guys, too. You're I adore so you both. Strong. I admire you both fully. I'm glad you're doing this.
Yeah.
It's an honor to be here.
We're so honored to have you on.
Yes.
And you truly, the thing is, not a lot of women talk about this. Mm. So I think you're so strong and you're such an idol for coming out and being open about these things that not most people don't want to necessarily talk about.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, we're collectively normalizing it.
Yeah.
All vulvas are beautiful. They're all healthy. They're good.
Cheers to vulvas.
Cheers to that.
To vulvas.
To vulvas.
Hell yeah.
Thank you so much for watching. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Bush Babies World, as well as our personal accounts at Roxetteresa and at Rachel Traw. And make sure to join our Discord to be an official part of the BB community. Make sure to stay up to date with everything we have going on at www.bushbabiesworld.com.